Hello and welcome to the Data Journalism Podcast. My name is Simon Rogers. I'm a data journalist, speaker and teacher and data editor at Google.
And I am Alberto Cairo. I am a professor of visualization at the University of Miami, an infographics designer and journalist, and also a book author.
We love using data to tell stories, and the music you can hear is the sound of data made with Two-Tone, an app that turns numbers into tunes.
And this is the Data Journalism Podcast, the only podcast, as far as we know, and at least so far, that dissects the latest trends in data journalism around the world. In each episode, we will explore the latest in data journalism, and we will chat with some of the world's top data journalists. You will get to find out how they do what they do.
So subscribe at datajournalismpodcast.com to see how data is changing the world of journalism forever.
I love that forever part. I always do.
I know. Well, maybe we should just say change of the world forever, because obviously but there you go. So, Alberto, tell us about our guest this week.
Oh, yeah. We have a very exciting guest. He actually appears in my latest book, The Art of Insight, which is a series of conversations with data visualization designers from all over the world. We will talk about it eventually, about the book eventually in the podcast. But today we are meeting with Attila Batorfi, who is a data journalist, data visualization designer, data reporter from Budapest in Hungary. And he's a pioneering figure in Central Europe when it comes to data journalism. In the podcast, he shares tons of stories about how he began. That's a very interesting story, I think. And he also discusses a little bit about how difficult it can get to produce this type of work under a regime like Viktor Orban's in Hungary.
Well, indeed. And he also talks about Hungary as a data journalism superpower. So I can't wait to share that. I think he's got a point, actually. I think there's a ton of really interesting work happening there, and definitely outpunches its weight, for sure.
Absolutely. Let's jump right in.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for inviting me to this podcast. My name is Attila Batorfi. I'm a data journalist working and living in Budapest, Hungary. And I also teach data journalism and data visualization at the university, ELTE University, which is the largest one in here in Hungary.
Thank you for being with us today. I think that, I mean, my first question is a very basic one, because one of the purposes of this podcast is to expose our listeners to people who practice data journalism all over the world. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your career? I am already familiar with it, but there are so many interesting facts about your career in data journalism that I think that are worth sharing. So why don't we begin with that?
Okay. Thank you for the question. I was doing very normal journalism. I started my career 15, 16 years ago at a business-to-business publication called Creative Magazine, which is quite similar to Campaign or Brand Republic or Advertising Age. And for years, I did, again, very normal journalism, interviews, reporting, small news production. And then we had the opportunity to dig deeper in advertising expenditures by the government or by the state. And back in time, it was an opportunity to us because we were a very small publication. And we saw that somehow this way can lead us to, how to say, to be a little bit more prestigious magazine or news organization. And then we received an Excel spreadsheet about the state advertising expenditures. And the first thing what I did was to print out all the Excel spreadsheets. I mean, hundreds of pages of Excel spreadsheet. And I laid it down to the floor of the office, and with a marker pen, I tried to find some patterns and outliers in the data set. And then the financial director of the organization came into the office and he asked me, what the hell are you doing, Attila, right now? And I was telling them that, okay, I would like to find some corruption in the data set or some kind of money misuse or whatever. So, and he told me that this is what Excel for. This is why it was invented. So I'm going to show you how to use the Excel. From this came out a huge story about how the Hungarian government and how the Hungarian state spent advertising expenditure into pro-government friendly media outlets. And it was huge. It exploded. And the article was accompanied by a couple of diagrams, not a couple, 22 or 25, I can't remember. I was very happy about the Excel, because Excel created those very bad graphics, I have to say, so I'm not proud of them. I can't delete them from the internet anymore, but that it was, how to say, 11 years ago or 12 years ago. So that was my start, and it wasn't love at first sight, to be honest, to work with large amount of data. I have a background in humanities. I'm an art historian, basically, and I have a degree in communication and media studies. But it was completely new field for me to work with data and creating graphics.
But we can get to the details later, if I may interrupt, because yeah. I find that story fascinating. And full disclosure, I interviewed Attila too for my latest book, The Art of Insight. So I'm familiar with all these stories. And this particular one was so fascinating. I mean, imagining you printing out all these spreadsheets and essentially manipulating them by hand rather than using pivot tables. I find that hilarious, but I also find it sort of like close to my own experience early in my career when I knew essentially nothing and I had to learn by doing, and because I needed to get things done. And you essentially find a way to get things done. That's what you did, right? Were other people doing data journalism at the time in Hungary?
No one. I mean, there was no word for that. I mean, that is completely new. Data journalism was completely new. There was maybe a couple of years earlier some sort of mini conference. I don't know who organized this about. But it wasn't only about data journalism, it was about data and humanities or whatever. And I don't want to lie to you, but as far as I can remember, maybe Mona Shalabi was one of the guest speakers at this mini conference. And so she was the invited star guest speaker. But it wasn't a thing. We had a small handbook at the university when we learned or when we were taught about journalism and methods, and it was called computer-assisted journalism. That was the name, or precision journalism, that what we used, but in Hungarian language. But no, data journalism was completely new, so no one did it. Someone created extremely good infographics. And I can remember that colleagues at the print newspaper, they won Malofi Award back in time in 2011, 2010, around that years. So, but they created information graphics and not data graphics.
So, Attila, thanks so much for joining us. And I love hearing about your origin story, because I feel like for a lot of people in this field, that is a typical origin where you come in, you don't know much about what's available, and suddenly these tools seem like magic. You can create and make things. But I would love to know a little bit more about how your work goes kind of day to day, because I'm looking at your site and the number of different kind of clients and partners you have, from NGOs to news organizations to kind of academic organizations. Tell us a little bit about what your group does day to day.
Okay. So what we are doing today, it was originally just a visual journalism production team, launched in 2018. I managed to convince my former editor-in-chief, Tomáš Boloky, that let's try to be the first visual journalism team in Hungary. And after 1 year, it was a complete catastrophe, I have to say. Around 2019, we were about to close down because we were actually quite bad, to be honest. We weren't good at what... I was a little bit impatient because, you know, what I wanted to do was the same as the New York Times, as the Guardian, Financial Times did. But we weren't able to do that because we were lacking knowledge, technology, whatever. So, but then around 2000, when the coronavirus hit Hungary too, so it was an increasement, a skyrocketing interest in data graphics in Hungary too. So let's say the coronavirus saved our project. And from that point, as we got very well known in Hungary, we were in television channels, in the radio, everywhere with our coronavirus monitoring page. So clients...
Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because that is also a very interesting story, because it relates to how the Hungarian government... Maybe I'm getting things wrong here, but try to conceal the real numbers, and you did something to overcome that. So let's talk a little bit about that.
So the basic idea from my part was that I told the editor-in-chief of the news organization, which was Outlook, which was a part of that news organization, that, okay, we don't know what will happen, but let's try to monitor the numbers, the basic numbers. And let's try to calculate additional statistics out of that, because the Hungarian government started to disclose or release only 5 or 6 basic data, which weren't enough to evaluate the importance of the coronavirus here in Hungary. So that's why we started to scrape down, first manually collecting the data, because they disclosed the data in image format, mental. So, but then we wrote a program just to optically recognize the numbers in the images. So later it was automatized. And then... for some reason, for good reason, I thought that there will be discrepancies in the data. So there will be huge lags between 2 days or 2 weeks, or there will be some kind of outliers in the data. So again, but first I had to convince my editor-in-chief, who was very, very, very skeptical about it, because he thought that no one in the world would follow a diagram on the coronavirus data on diagrams and maps and their other graphics. But it exploded. So later he was very satisfied, because more than maybe 75% of the total audience come from the coronavirus monitor project. So,
and what was the reaction of the Hungarian government to this project?
There was no, they never ever communicate with the public like this. Then we requested additional data at the government. They always denied. Once they said that we don't collect this kind of data, meanwhile, we knew that obviously they were collecting this kind of data. Otherwise, how the country could defend against the coronavirus crisis. So obviously, they collected this data, but they didn't want to disclose. So we sued not only us, but other news organizations and NGOs, sued the government or the operative body which was responsible to disclosing this kind of data to the public. And eventually, one NGO won the legal process. So at the end, they received the data, they made it public, and so everyone could work with the newly public data. So, but there were so many problems. There were so many problems with the official data release. So,
and why was that? Was there something special that the numbers were concealing? How was the government responding to the pandemic, for example?
First, they were in denial. So they thought that for some reason, the entire crisis will fly over Hungary. So the coronavirus crisis wouldn't affect Hungary. And until September, November of 2020, they were very proud that they were right about it, because the first wave was quite small here in Hungary, but then the second. So Hungary almost collapsed under the second and the third wave of the coronavirus crisis. So, and then from that point, they started to take very seriously the crisis.
Got it. So you will say that the coronavirus tracker is probably your most influential project to date?
Maybe the most viewed project or most read project. Yeah, around 4.5 million unique users. So, yeah.
What about the project that you are most proud of?
Those are tiny projects I'm proud of. So it's not related to the audience or the success of the story. There are many of my favorites, but they are not so important. I'm a little bit shy guy regarding this. So
what about your work as a historian of visualization? Maybe we can switch to that and talk a little bit about what you're doing, trying to unearth early examples of data visualizations from Central and Eastern Europe.
Yeah. This is not a standalone interest. So for me, when I started to learn how to create graphics, for me, it was not a question that I have to know the history of that, right? For that reason, I started wondering what happened in Hungary, because we had great examples from UK, from the United States, France, Italy, Germany, and so on and so forth, so mostly from Western European countries of the Western world. My PhD research is about the Hungarian history. So when I started to dig deeper in the Hungarian history, I simply found a couple of very interesting graphics, which are earlier than the well-established, well-known graphics which are championed and trumpeted by the Western world. So let's see later that how it will be published, my thesis. So, but I'm ready with this. So, but there are many interesting graphics.
What kinds of things did you discover? Is there any you can talk about here?
For instance, I have a very interesting flow map from the late 18th century, a Hungarian flow map. Now the general knowledge is that it was by Henry Drury Harness, the Irish engineer, the first flow map in the world. But we have an example 60 years earlier, a Hungarian example. So I think it's remarkable. Even Michael Friendly recognized as the first on Twitter, the first flow map. We have a wonderful geo map before Harry Beck's diagram, UK underground map. Again, 60 years earlier than the Harry Beck map, which wasn't the first in the UK. So we have a couple of good examples, even isotype examples.
This kind of investigative data journalism history is super interesting to me, because I think there is this real danger for me that the time we live in now is the time that won't be possible to know what people did, because everything is online, libraries change, those projects will die eventually. Whereas you have something on paper, it can be from the 1700s, and you'll be able to see it, and you can see how influential it is.
Yeah, this is what I'm afraid of. So that's why I started to document my work or our work at Atlo. Everything we started to download and documenting, because we are afraid of that what we are producing online, it won't be available 10 years ago. So
it feels to me like journalists are particularly bad at this, aren't they? Sorry,
Albert. I was about to say that it's a real challenge, because most of my work from the early 2000s is essentially gone, because it was made in Flash, and I still have the Flash files, but it's hard to find a tool to open them up, so I keep them. I keep many of them as screenshots. Essentially, that's the way that I keep them, but I cannot open the actual file.
Yeah, the same year. So,
So, can you talk a little bit about? So, you also work. You also teach classes at ELTE University. And I guess that most of our listeners are not familiar with ELTE University. So, maybe you can talk a little bit about what makes this institution different to other higher education institutions in Hungary, and then maybe talk a little bit about the classes that you teach.
Yeah. So ELTE University is the oldest and the largest university here in Hungary, headquartered in Budapest. So this is the center of the university, and maybe the last, the last university which isn't taken over by the government, or it's independent still from the Orban government. So maybe this gives it uniqueness or exceptionality. I don't know how far we can get with this, because we are also the poorest university in Hungary, in parallel with this.
maybe those two things are correlated.
Yeah, it correlates. Yeah. So in 2019, I was hired as a master teacher of data journalism and information graphics. And now this is my full-time job. Unfortunately, I don't have more time now to create more graphic work or data journalism work. I'm thinking about how to go back to half employee at the university, but it's impossible because no one can teach my classes to the students. So, and I also have mentorees who are writing their theses at the university, more than 10 this year. So, shit. It's a lot of work.
It is a lot. It's one of the blessings and the curses of being a pioneer in a field and in a country.
But the problem is that there are other universities which are offering data visualization courses, but I told Alberto that the problem is that at all of the universities, we are three of us basically in Hungary. So we teach at all of the universities data visualization, which is not a good situation, to be honest, or not a proper situation. It would be great if we would have other data visualization experts or information designers here in Hungary who would like to teach, because apart from that, I need to tell you that I think Hungary is a data visualization superpower. I mean, comparing with the size of this small country, I mean, there is Krisztina Szücs. We are all of the conferences presenting. I mean, Hungarian information designers, so data visualization experts. We are writing papers, even journal papers. So I don't know why, but for some reason, we are an information graphics superpower right now in Hungary.
You started off within the newsroom. And now you've expanded and you're independent, really. Now you are in charge of your destiny. So what do you get from that independence? Like, well, how does that help you kind of improve and grow as a data storyteller?
We are not growing. We are two of us. No.
No, you know what I mean? But like in your personal skills, like how do you get better? Because does that help you being independent and not having to be told what to do all the time? You're in charge, right?
So. Yeah, exactly. You're right. So I think this is a very fortunate situation that I can decide even about clients. So if I won't work for Deutsche Telekom, for instance, I won't work for them. Or if I don't want to work for a political party, I won't work for them. So this is extreme freedom, at least in Hungary. So this is a privilege, I know. But we worked hardly for getting or reaching this privilege to decide whether we would like to work with someone or not. It was a hard work. So we put 10 years of work, basically. I mean, from my part, to have this privilege.
It is an amazingly impressive thing. I think anybody can build a business out of the work. I'm really impressed by.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't do it for living. This is my passion. So it's okay if I get money for this work. I'm happy with that. But most of the content we create for free and not for commissioned work, because we want to do that, because we want to create that, and no one pays for it. So and again, this is a privilege. I know.
It is. Thank you. And I'm really glad you said that, because I think that's really important to have that in mind for anybody who's just starting out in their career, that, you know, it's not normal to be able to do this incredible work. So, you know, appreciate it when you do get to do it. So, Taylor, we have a couple of quick questions for you. First one is, two or three books or classes that had an impact on you as a professional?
Oh, come on. Okay. There is so hard question. Because obviously I read all of your books, I have them. What was it? Lastly, because I'm in a library book, this. I mean, this is so fantastically well written.
Tell people what's called. Yeah, tell people what you're looking at here, because
we're looking at the camera. Yeah, the camera.
Recording. Data visualization handbook by Jonathan Hilden and Juuso Koponen. I mean, the execution, the design, like everything is so fantastic in this book. So. But it wasn't the last I read, which was then. Let me compile from my library. Howard Weiner's Picturing the Uncertain World, which was impactful to me. And there are so many other basic books here.
I should point out for listeners that basically Attila's desk is covered in books.
Yeah.
So what we can work out here.
You have a huge library, you told me.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah. You collected a huge library just to learn the craft.
Yeah. And maybe this one. Theodore Rice.
The Rise of Statistical Thinking, 1820 to 1900. Yeah. I don't have that one. I'm going to order that one. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, this was the latest. I mean, it's not a very old book, but. It gave me understanding how not only this the science of statistics was formed, but the thinking about it with many bad pathways, wrongdoings with statistics, abusing statistics in the 19th century, how it was used for propaganda or nationalism or whatever. So, right now maybe, but I could mention 10 or 20 more books. I'm a bookworm, to be honest. Yeah.
All right. I guess that we can jump to the next question. Can you talk a little bit about? Let's talk about tools. If you could keep just one of the tools that you commonly use, what would that be?
I use Flourish most of the time, not only for the basics, but we use with codes for creating scrollytelling out of. And just came to mind, but the first time I met with Flourish, it was around 2015-16. I was in a study tour in the UK. I also was at Guardian's newsroom. Maybe Elena Bengtsson was the head of data or editor of data. And it was organized by the Google back in time, the Google News Initiative. And maybe I was the only one from Central Eastern Europe there. And there was the introduction of the new tool. I received an invitation card to try out Flourish. And again, first I thought that it won't be my tool, but later, as the Google poured more money, I suppose they developed very, very really quickly. So now I use Flourish on a daily basis right now.
An amazing tool. Really happy to hear that. And love the Flourish crew. They're brilliant. Attila, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a real eye-opener to hear about your work, and I can't wait to see what's going to come for you guys next.